From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As the coronavirus surges across the nation in record-breaking numbers, with more than a quarter of a million Americans dead and upwards of 200,000 new infections a day, workers on the front lines of the economy remain more vulnerable than ever. Those employees of mega corporations deemed essential are routinely exposed not only to the virus, but to the ravages of an economy rigged against them. As hazard pay has dried up and wages remain low, the profits of companies like Walmart, Amazon, and Target are more bloated than ever. Explaining how pandemic profiteers impact community health is a new report by inequality.org. It's called Simply Billionaire Wealth Versus Community Health, and one of its co-authors now joins me, Chuck Collins. Chuck is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. He's written a number of books, including 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It, and Born on Third Base, a One Percenter, makes the case for tackling inequality, bringing wealth home, and committing to the common good. He's a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Chuck.
Hi, Sonali. Great to be with you.
So you and I have talked several times since the pandemic began about how some corporations have been doing better than ever. I mean, literally profiting off of the pandemic at the same time as thousands, hundreds of thousands of small businesses have been falling by the wayside and might even be permanently lost. What does this latest report show? It seems as though you focused not just on how companies are profiting, but the direct consequence of that profiteering on communities.
I mean, we looked at sort of overall how billionaire wealth continues to almost approach $1 trillion since the beginning of the pandemic. But then we zeroed in on a dozen companies. We call them the delinquent dozen, where they are seeing their owners are getting wealthy, the shareholders are getting wealthy, but they're just not doing enough to invest in protecting their workers. There are companies like the dollar stores, Amazon, Walmart, Instacart, Tyson's Food. You know, their CEO, billionaire founder, saw his personal wealth go up $600 billion, but they have 11,000 COVID infections in Tyson facilities. You know, Amazon, Jeff Bezos' wealth up $70 billion with over 20,000 infections. So it's clear, even as we go into this kind of winter pandemic painful moment, that these companies should be stepping up, as some of them did briefly in March and April, and do more to protect their workers.
You mentioned Tyson Foods, and I imagine the work on your report began before the headline that we heard recently about how managers at Tyson Food Corporations were betting on which employees would get sick. That should, I suppose, indicate to us how little this company thinks of its workers.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing is owners and managers who are kind of in these bubbles. I mean, can you imagine a bunch of managers doing an office pool on how many of their workers will get infected? It just shows that they're how remote they are and disconnected from their frontline essential workers. And that is a key part of this problem. You have, you know, an ownership class that's essentially in a protective bubble. They're sitting in private jets, or they're far removed, and they're sending their employees into the viral line of fire without adequate protection. And if these companies can't figure out how to adequately protect their workers, especially when their profits are surging, then it's really up to government and the rest of us to intervene and ensure that these workers are protected.
Now, let's talk about the fact that these workers who are earning very little money, you mentioned earlier, had been earning hazard pay during the initial parts of the pandemic. We're talking about things, you know, something on the order of $2 an hour extra. That hazard pay has now pretty much, I understand, for the most part, most employers have stopped paying that. But the pandemic is worse now than it was when the hazard pay was first offered. Literally, there's more community transmission. There are more infected people at any moment now than there were in the early part of the pandemic, which means that the chance of workers catching the virus is much higher now, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is, we are heading into a winter of pain. And, you know, unlike March and April, when people were applauding their essential workers and, you know, celebrating them, some of the spotlight has shifted off, but the situation is actually even more grim. And I just spoke to a worker from a warehouse in Long Island, an Amazon employee, who just described to me how, you know, the she gets a text every time someone enters the building has been, you know, that they've you know been infected, you know, they tested negative or they tested positive for COVID. And she says she gets several of these texts a day. Can you imagine sitting in your workplace and just getting bing, bing, bing? You know, another person has been infected coming in. We're not going to tell you who it was or where, what department they're in, but you just have to be careful. I mean, this is the moment when you need to have hazard pay, really good family medical leave policies. You don't want to punish people from quarantining if they've been exposed. You want to have them be able to voluntarily quarantine when they know they've been exposed. We have to be thinking not just about these workers, but their families and extended families going into this winter. So this is the time to kind of reinvigorate that same protective spirit that existed a couple months ago.
And those are among the recommendations you make in your report in terms of hazard pay, much higher hazard pay and paid sick leave, et cetera. There was another report that came out around the same time that yours did. And this was a government report. It was issued by the United States Government Accountability Office. I believe it was Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders who commissioned the report or requested that it be produced, which found that there are millions of workers around the country that are employed by these big corporations who are paying them so little that these workers are forced to rely on government assistance, which is essentially a taxpayer-funded subsidy to these big corporations. Tell me about this report and how it ended up having a significant overlap with the report that your organization and you put out.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really important report. It's something that we know about a couple companies. Now, we know that Walmart employees, many of them get food stamps, SNAP benefits, or depend on Medicaid for their health care. But what this report did was really look at a number of states and which private, and what we found, what the GAO report shows is 12 million working adults working mostly in private sector companies get Medicaid. Another 9 million depend on SNAP benefits, food stamps, to sort of supplement their wages. And 70% of them are working full-time in private companies. So, and if you look at the list of our delinquent dozen and who are the companies that are, whose workers are getting public benefits, the list overlaps enormously. I mean, it's Walmart, it's Amazon, it's the dollar stores, Dollar General, Family General, Target, McDonald's, Tyson Foods, the same companies which are underpaying their workers to the extent so that they have to go and get government benefits are the same companies that are enormously profitable and not protecting their workers adequately at this moment.
Let's talk about politics, because these companies are able to get away with paying their workers low wages and reap these enormous benefits through tax breaks because conservatives have pushed for that. The same conservatives who deny or make it harder and harder for low-wage workers to access government assistance. They're pushing wealth upwards and chastising workers who are being forced to access government wealth on the bottom. It is such a squeeze. This is class warfare by design, it seems.
Yeah, it's kind of socialism for the rich. We are going to subsidize private companies, enormously profitable companies, so they can keep their wages low, underpay their workers, and the taxpayer, the rest of us, are going to pick up the slack for healthcare and insufficient wages to even be able to pay for their grocery bills. So, you know, it is that sort of weird political frame where these companies get to go around saying, yes, we're private sector companies, and we should get tax benefits for, you know, being job creators, and yet we as taxpayers are subsidizing their workers who are inadequately paid.
And at the same time, President Trump was slashing food benefits. The SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which the GAO report showed millions of workers relying on, Trump slashed it and was stopped only by a federal judge who struck down those cuts. So, you know, it's just quite remarkable. These are also the same conservatives, Trump and his ilk, who have denounced the raising of the federal minimum wage. However, one of the things that happened during the November 3rd race was that in some places around the country, there were statewide propositions, and I know your organization, inequality.org, covered this, that reduced inequality when the matter was brought to voters directly, right?
That's right. In the state of Florida, you know, a $15 minimum wage ballot initiative passed, even as voters voted for President Trump. It actually shows that people understand minimum wage is ridiculously low. The federal minimum wage has not been raised in over a decade, and many workers cannot just, you know, survive on these essentially poverty wages. And it's interesting there. You know, the GAO report identified five sectors where, you know, almost all these workers, you know, 80% of these private sector workers come from the grocery store sector, the restaurant and food preparation, leisure, recreation. You know, those are the main employers who are paying these low poverty wages, sub-minimum wage, really, sub-living wage.
Let's talk about the racial justice aspect of this issue. Going back to your report, Billionaire Wealth versus Community Health, that was put out by inequality.org. What do you find about how inequality is distributed across various racial groups?
I should say the report was also put out by United for Respect, mm-hmm. Bargaining for Common Good, and Jobs with Justice, and a number of essential worker groups. We at the Institute for Policy Studies was just one of the groups. But what, you know, we very much zeroed in on this juxtaposition. You have almost entirely white, affluent billionaires and owners of these companies with a workforce that, you know, in the case of Target, 58% female, 50% black and brown, and the disproportionate number of COVID cases for primarily black workers. So, you know, it's a situation where these essential workers, these frontline workers, the ones who are really taking the risk and creating the wealth for these companies, are overwhelmingly female and people of color.
So you also, so that's an important part of this whole conversation. When we're talking about wealth inequality, it's not just about class. There's always race intertwined. There's the wealthy profiteers at the top, the essential workers that are disproportionately black and brown at the bottom. And we've just had a major election where in a disparate manner, in a patchwork manner, some voters were able to work towards reducing inequality, but by and large, this was not an agenda in the election. President Trump, of course, happy to send people checks with his name on them, you know, or sign off on legislation that ends right around the election that he can take credit for, understands that people see government assistance not as some bogeyman under the guise of socialism, but as something necessary during the pandemic. How important is it for these issues to be front and center in our news media and in our culture, in our conversations around, you know, the dinner table?
Well, we are up against sort of a story of you know, self-sufficient, virtuous capitalists and companies that are creating jobs. And when workers make an argument for hazard pay, people say, "Oh, you know, this is you know, subsidizing government subsidies for workers." What I hope is clear from our conversation is these are private companies that are subsidized by taxpayers,
right,
to pay their workers low amounts of money, and that the billionaires, the people who are reaping the greatest amount of rewards, are actually taking the least risk at this moment in terms of you know, delivering the goods. I mean, I spoke to this Amazon warehouse worker who said, you know, she likes her job. She likes to, you know that she's helping people get the things that they need, but they just know, you know, when Jeff Bezos has paid $70 billion, the least they can do is give them some better masks and support, you know, hazard pay and provide sort of the resources they need to protect themselves and their families.
The conservative approach to this sort of inequality is to hope for or incentivize corporations to, you know, throw a few crumbs at the employee table. But there's a very direct thing that could be done, right? Looking at all of the profits that have been reaped by these massive corporations, one could easily envision a direct government pandemic wealth tax. Tell me about this, because this is something that the report, the billionaire wealth report addresses. Let's just make them give the money and pour it into community health.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, our recommendations fell into three categories. One, what is it the company should be doing? And one of those was they should be supporting worker councils. You know, ask their employees to identify the best practices for protecting themselves. If they can't, if the companies don't act, then government should act, you know, by passing essential bills of rights, you know, essential worker bill of rights, legislate protections. And then we have the problem you're talking about, Sonali, which is, what do you do about the fact that these companies, some of them are extracting billions of dollars from the real economy by virtue of the fact that their competition has been shut down? I mean, what happened with Walmart, Amazon, Target was because they sold groceries, they became essential businesses, and they were able to essentially compete against their competition, which was shut down. So they've reaped benefits from the pandemic. And we advocate for this emergency pandemic wealth tax. You know, Senator Sanders and Senator Markey and Gillibrand have all proposed a 60% tax on the wealth that's grown in the hands of U.S. billionaires since the beginning of the pandemic. Well, that's almost $1 trillion. So let's say it's $550 billion. That's money that could be directed directly to health and safety and healthcare, public health. It could go to state and local governments to implement state-level policies. You know, I'm sitting in the state of Vermont, where Vermont took some of their federal COVID funds and created its own hazard pay program. So 35,000 workers in Vermont who are paid less than $20 an hour are going to get an extra couple thousand dollars. One interesting thing is that it required the employers to apply. And initially, Amazon wouldn't even apply for free money to go to their workers. They were ashamed of it. But the dollar stores, and there's 27 dollar stores in Vermont, none of them have applied. So their workers will not be able to get this free money from the state of Vermont for low-wage workers.
Unbelievable. So I understand that, when we talk about a tax like this, it still leaves a giant amount of the profits intact for these corporations. This sort of wealth tax in no way undermines their business model, undermines the enormous and outrageous, obscene CEO compensation packages. It simply means, you know, pennies on the dollar away from what they're able to pocket that they've unfairly gotten to begin with. But of course, that is denounced as socialism whenever the issue is raised. There's also the Stop Wall Street Looting Act that you refer to in your report. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and one thing I should mention is that a number of the delinquent dozen are private equity companies. So they're kind of private conglomerations of very wealthy people who buy up usually profitable companies, cut costs, load them up with debt, extract them out of a bunch of wealth, and then try to sell them off. And that private equity model is completely incompatible with a pandemic where we should be investing in protecting workers. So you have, you know, Blackstone, Cerebras, a number of these big private equity companies that own supermarkets, healthcare. The private equity has moved into healthcare. So, you know, that legislation was really aimed at sort of the predatory private equity market and eliminating things like this, what's called the carried interest subsidy, where these private equity people actually pay lower taxes because they treat their fees as capital. It gets taxed as capital, not as wages. and they pay even less taxes. So there's a number of, you know, ways in which we should be constraining and reining in reckless private equity companies. And that's what that legislation would do.
Wow. So is there a sense that you have that some of these recommendations are on the incoming Biden-Harris administration's agenda?
I think very much. I mean, I think, you know, everyone recognizes there needs to be another sort of COVID relief bill, months ago, and that some of these protections for essential workers should be part of it. And some conditions, if a company is getting government bailout funds of some kind, there should be conditions on that bailout in terms of maintaining their workforce, ensuring that they're investing in protecting their workers, implementing hazard pay and paid family leave, bereavement policies. You know, we should put conditions on any support that's going to these private companies. I think there's enormous appetite for it. And I think most people, as they understand, know that these workers are risking, you know, their lives and their livelihoods to provide basic goods and just don't have the adequate protection. So I think there's a political groundswell of support for some of those kinds of policies.
Where can people get a hold of your report, Chuck?
Yeah, it's Billionaire Wealth versus Community Health. It's at inequality.org and at the Institute for Policy Studies. And check it out. Check out the recommendations. And there's some terrific media coverage coming out about the report that I think will hopefully amplify these conversations.
And we'll post a direct link to that as well from our website. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Sonali.
My guest has been Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. He is also co-author of a new report called Billionaire Wealth versus Community Health, Protecting Essential Workers from Pandemic Profiteers. It was produced by a Bargaining for the Common Good, the Institute for Policy Studies, and United for Respect. We've also been discussing the GAO report that Bernie Sanders requested. We'll link to that as well from our website, which is risingupwithsonali.com. where you can also sign up for our daily newsletter. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. You can find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.